on ABC Sport, your home of cricket.
The Gabba crowd applaud that with good reason. KL Rahul in the end picking up just a single in what looked like a certain boundary. India 2 for 22.
Ends the over, Australia 2 for 22.
They'll take a single, the Aussie pair. 2 for 22.
And it's the Richie number on the board. How good are you at the Richie?
2 for 22.
Yeah, no, the great man. Grew up listening to Richie.
On your radio, ABC Sport Digital Radio, and on the ABC Listen app.
If you're enjoying Summer Grandstand on ABC Sport live from the Everest, it's time to zero in on our run into the Ashes. We've been speaking to a number of the voices that you'll hear across one of the most keenly anticipated summers, and you'll hear him actually next Thursday with the one-day series at the Adelaide Oval, as well as across the Ashes tests. A man who started his career as the Ponytail Express and went on to score 200 with the bat before being unceremoniously dropped. The one and the only, Jason Dizzy Gillespie, is with you. Diz, nice to have a chat to you. How are you?
Dark Hugh, great, always great to chat to you, mate. And I love the fact that you brought up the 200 that I scored because I always cop some stick by people say that I always bring it up. So it was nice that you brought it up.
Well, I needed an excuse to again bring in the nickname, which is not as well known for you. Everyone knows you as Dizzy, but when you were that young man with the ponytail hairing in Adelaide in your teen years, it was one of the great nicknames that's gone underused across the years, the Ponytail Express.
Yeah, I was given that many years ago. I'm not sure who gave it to me, but yeah, when I was first playing for South Australia, I had the long hair and up in the ponytail, and that just seemed to stick, and had that until I cut my hair, I suppose. But yeah, Dizzy was always in the background, and that took prominence.
Look, we'll get to your personal memories of the Ashes and predictions and analysis. It's a part of our 2 for 22 segment, which you'll be hearing in the lead up to the first test. But a couple of issues rolling around, and we have to start with the fast bowling cartel and the continued expectation that Pat Cummins is not going to be there for the first test. So it's a pretty easy, straight up first question. Do we go with the tried and true if Stark, Boland and Hazelwood are fit, or do we need to look somewhere else for Perth?
I think obviously with Pat Cummins, an unlikely starter, in his own words, he says he's unlikely. I think we go. Boland is a straight swap in, isn't he? Scotty Boland's record in test cricket is quite ridiculous, actually. He's been absolutely superb, hasn't he? And, I think in any other era, he would have played a lot more cricket for our country. But who are the next cabs off the rank, so to speak, Q? And if there is another injury, one beyond Pat Cummins' injury, there's some contenders. Obviously, Brendan Doggett's been on the last couple of tours as a backup seamer, that he's been injured in the early parts of the season for South Australia. Fergus O'Neill for Victoria keeps taking wickets. Him and Nathan McAndrew of South Australia have taken probably in the last three seasons the most wickets in Sheffield cricket. So then you've got the evergreen Michael Nisa in Queensland, who keeps doing what he keeps doing, wonderful contributor for Queensland for many, many years. So there's a number of contenders. Just wonder, do the selectors have got a decision to make, I suppose. Do they reward performance at sheer level, or do they go with attributes, fast, quick bowlers who may not have the record, first-class record behind them, but give them a go? But
what would you do?
I'm not sure. I think someone like a Callum Vidler would have been very much on the selector's radar.
He's the young quick from Queensland, if you don't know who Jason's talking about. He's one of that under-19 World Cup winning crop that Constance is part of as well, and Hugh Wigan. Yeah. He's a very fresh pick there, Dizzy.
He's fast, but at the moment he's injured, so he's out for a period of time. So he's not on the radar. So I suspect the selectors We'll look to reward some performances. The only other one, I suppose, if they want airspeed, is Tasmania's Riley Meredith, who bowls with good pace. But You know, he's probably been inconsistent in getting on the park. He's had a couple of injury concerns. I suppose the other one you could throw into the mix, you know, a bit of a left field kick is Joel Parris from Western Australia. You know, 200 first class wickets at 19, they're pretty good numbers. And so I suspect the selectors, if they need some backup, will look at either Nisa, Fergus O'Neill, Nathan McAndrew, possibly a Joel Parris or a Riley Meredith for mine.
It's a broad selection you've given us there, Jason.
I haven't narrowed it down so much, have I? Sorry.
But the good thing is there are names that are well performed and experienced at Shield level because there hasn't been the opportunities in the Test team. The one thing I will hone in on, though, on Boland, because let's be honest, where we sit today, that looks like it's the likely option with Pat Cowan's unlikely to play in the first Test. Real or false? Boland in Australia is a much better option than Boland in England. We're hearing this talk that the English don't fear Boland because he was a little impotent over in English conditions. Is it real or false?
I think in Australia, with a bit of extra bounce, a little bit of sideways movement, I think Scott Boland could be quite a handful. And I think if I was England, I'd be treating him with a... I'd be taking him a bit more respectfully than what we're hearing. Yes, he didn't have a great time in England. He played one or two tests and didn't really have an impact, but he'll certainly have an impact in Australia and England and not silly. They'll know that.
Jason Gillespie here on Summer Grandstand, live from Royal Randwick on Everest Day, but of course counting down to the Ashes in Perth. Jason, a big part of our broadcast team. As much as you know fast bowling so well, I'm going to ask you about a guy you know well because he continues to be spoken about in the conversation around our top order. You've coached Jake Weatherald. He nearly made 100 in the Shield game this week for Tassie. So what are the things that go through your mind when you think of whether or not he could be ready to partner Usman Khawaja in an Ashes Test match at the top of the order?
Well, I just look at he has played a lot of first-class cricket now. He made the move to Tasmania, felt he needed a fresh start. He's gone down to Tasmania, and his last season, was pretty impressive. On a belly reef surface that offers a lot to seam bowlers at domestic level throughout the game, he's gone in opening the batting and scored north of 900 runs at a tick over 50. For me, you know, finding the balance between, you know, obviously the selectors went the other way and looked at attributes and went on potential with the selection of Constance. I suspect this time they'll look to the pool of players that have been playing domestic cricket and look to reward strong performances. And I think it's hard to ignore Jake Weatherall. Biggest challenge for him will be to manage his own expectation and manage the occasion. But as I said, he's much more experienced now. In the past, that may have been an issue for him, but I suspect, having been around for a while now, he'd be ready to take it on. And one of the reasons I think Jake Weatherall could do it, because I could do the job, I think he can complement Usman Khawaja well. Usman looks to take his time and absorb some good bowling. Jake can take the attack to the English, much in the vein that David Warner did for many, many years successfully for Australia. So that's why I'm probably putting him in the frame. The other ones that are in the frame, I think the selection of Matt Renshaw in the one-day squad is a real point that this selectors are looking at him closely, and they see him as an option. He has played Test cricket in the past with a degree of success. His white ball cricket is amazing at the moment. He's doing so well for Queensland.
That sort of would eliminate any player going in there overawed if you went for Renshaw. As you said, if the question with Weatherald is whether he can handle the occasion, well, you don't have that question with Renshaw as much as the Ashes is big for anyone.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Q. So that's why, and I know the selectors are fans of what Renshaw brings, and he's a good player. The other one I'm going to throw up, and it might be a bit of a smoky, bit of a very left field, is Mitchell Marsh. We know Mitchell Marsh is a very good player of fast bowling. We see, and his white ball form is in for Australia has been superb at the top of the order. And with England selections, they've gone very pace heavy. Is that something that the selectors will take into consideration?
Okay, let's get into this 2 for 22 segment where we are going to be hearing from all of our voices that you'll be listening to throughout the Ashes, and a couple of personal moments and also thoughts of the series ahead. Personally, Diz, when you think of the Ashes, first memory that comes to your mind?
My first main memory is watching David Boone sweep left-arm spinner Nick Cook 89 Ashes, and so Australia won the Ashes in England. And I remember sitting up overnight. I was in year nine in high school, and I remember sneaking out to watch it in the middle of the night during school and that, to see that, and to see Australia win and get the Ashes. That's probably my first highlight, first main highlight of Ashes cricket.
Yeah, that's a great one. Under Alan Border, a dominant performance from the Australians. Who was your toughest opponent you've faced in an Ashes series?
I'd have to say Michael Vaughan. I found him a challenge with the ball. He was such a fine batter, and I always found he could pick up length very quickly. So if you overpitched, he was all over you, hitting you down the ground. And if you just were ever so short, you could play cross-batted shots. He was fantastic. Facing bowlers, I suppose, Ashes bowlers, Andrew Flintoff was fast. He hit the bat hard. He was a great competitor. Probably those guys, I'd say.
Did you prepare differently for the Ashes compared to other Test series?
Not necessarily. I do reflect on that 05 Ashes, though, and, you know, one thing, and it was a real lesson for me, which I certainly took into my coaching career. I remember training and preparing for the Ashes, that 05 Ashes, and I was so desperate to play it and do well. I was almost cotton-wooling myself a bit, and I was just training, probably not at the intensity I needed to train at, because I was protecting my body, because I had a couple of little niggles, but nothing major. That was a lesson that I sort of reflected on after the Ashes and rectified that, you know, for the rest of my career. And then when I've certainly taken that into coaching, so I can kind of spot that a mile off if a bowler is just holding back and looking after themselves a bit, I can sort of see that a mile away.
Confessions of the past from Jason Gillespie. Just to finish that, so what's the one Ashes moment you'll never forget, good or bad?
It was team victories. I mean, we beat 0-2-3 Ashes. We won the Ashes inside 11 days, which was pretty special. So that was great out here in Australia. I think we had 2 4-day tests and a 3-day test, so that was pretty special. A personal highlight, probably a couple, taking 7 for at Headingley in Leeds in Yorkshire. That was pretty special in a winning test match. And then raising the ball, which the fast bowling cartel, we sort of started that in 2001 in England, raising the ball at Lord's after Glenn McGrath had done it in the first innings, taking 5 for. I managed to do that in the second inning. So a couple of nice little personal highlights. But overall, winning Ashes series is what it's all about. Winning Test matches and winning Ashes series is what it's all about. And, I'm very thankful that I was able to be part of 4 Ashes winning squads. So that's great.
I did my homework on that honour board. 5 for 53, Triscothic, Ramprakash, Butcher, Caddick and Goff. So, well, you got 3 that could hold the blade. I don't know about Caddick and Goff, but hey, it's 5 for it's 5 for
hey, it's a it's a 5 for a Lords, and no one can take it away from
exactly.
Me.
Exactly. Predictions now. What do you see as the biggest weaknesses for both teams, Diz, going into this Ashes series?
I think both top threes have question marks from a batting perspective. I think, you know, Australia, there's still conversations. You know, we've had a conversation today about top three. I think England are going to stack their batting, and I think they're worried about exposing their really strong, powerful middle order of Joe Root, Harry Brook and Ben Stokes at 4, 5, 6, and maybe Jamie Smith at 7. I think they're worried about exposing those guys because they're top three. Yes, they're aggressive with Duckett and Thorley opening the batting. But let's not forget, yes, they score at a strike rate of about 75, and that's great. Right, that's fine. And they England talk it up about how they're changing the game and all that. I'm pretty confident when there was a team back in the early 2000s that were doing that pretty well. But they average as an opening combination about 31, right? The best opening combinations in Ashes cricket have all scored averaged over 50. So you think the very good opening combinations, you think Cook and Strauss, Strauss-Triscothic, you think from an Australian perspective, you think Taylor Slater, you think Hayden Langer, you think Rogers Warner. These combinations all average over 50. Yes, they might not have scored as fast as Duckett and Crawley, but they scored more runs, took more time out of the game. We've got to remember that Ashes cricket, Test cricket, can be played over 5 days. I know the modern game, not many games go into 5 days, but you are allowed to play it over 5 days. But I think the glaring weakness for England is their spin bowling, their slow bowling. They've only picked Shoaib Bashir, who is not the first choice spinner in his county, Somerset, and Will Jacks, who is essentially a part-time off-spinner for his county as well.
Okay, we've got a few more to get through. Jason Gillespie with you on Summer Grandstand on ABC Sport, our 2 for 22, where we relive some personal highlights and look ahead with some learned predictions with the series in front of us. Which player has the biggest impact on the series in your mind, Jason?
I'm going to say Travis Head. Ooh. For Australia.
Okay.
I think batting in the middle order, yeah. I think he enjoys fast bowling. England are going to come pretty hard at him. He's worked incredibly hard on his game, particularly against the short ball of pace bowling. And he's turned himself into a wonderful international cricketer in all formats. And I think this is his series to absolutely shine. So I'm looking forward to seeing him do well.
Well, it was his breakout series, almost the renaissance 4 years ago when he was player of the series.
Correct.
Wasn't it? Started with that aggressive ton at the Gabba. Which captain's got the tougher job this series and why?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm not quite sure how to answer it, Q. I think Ben Stokes will have to manage expectation. They talk it up a lot, England. They talk about how they're changing the game and how they're going to go about it, how aggressive they're going to be. They've got to back that up. They've got to back that up in Australia, which is one of the toughest assignments in world cricket.
Sounds like you're leaning Stokes' way there, Jason.
Oh, I sense it, yeah. Look, I think, and there is and also I'll say that, I think what Collins has done as captain of Australia and in working closely with Ronnie McDonald, the head coach, is that they're bringing an element of calm, don't they? And that filters through the squad. There's no doubt. He's a real calming influence. So he'll be there front and centre, even if he isn't participating in the actual match. He'll be around the dressing room, offering support in any way he can. So I think he'll be a calming influence. I think Australia's actually quite settled. I don't think England are as settled as they claim they are. Let's see what happens, especially if they have a bad couple of days early in the series. Let's see what happens there.
Jason Gillespie with you on Summer Grandstand. Now, the last of the analysis questions we ask our experts. So, which is the crucial game that either Australia or England needs to win? Which venue, and we know the order of Perth, Brisbane, Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney. So, if you're looking at either team, which is the one test they need to win?
I'm saying Brisbane and I'm saying the Gabba, and I think England are the team that desperately need to win that game. We know Australia's record in day-night test matches. That's a big ask for for the English to try and come out on top in that test match. I fully expect Australia to play well in that test. And then if Australia have a good game in Perth in the West Test, which is the first test, then there could be Australia could be 2-0 up going into Adelaide, and that would be a pretty good position to be in.
And certainly the Gabba day-night tests have been a little volatile from an Australian perspective, having had a big fourth innings run chase from Pakistan, nearly run them down a few years ago, and, of course, Shamar Joseph in the West Indies upsetting the Aussies of recent histories. Mm-hmm. One-word answers with our closing questions. Which bowler takes the most Ashes wickets for the series, Jason?
Hazelwood.
Who do you see as the top run scorer for the series?
Head.
What's the one headline you think we'll be reading by the end of this series?
Australia 3-1.
Oh, and I don't have to ask you the last question, because the last question is, if you had to call the series result, what's your prediction? So you're going Australia...
Well, there we go, 3-1. 3-1. I'll go 3-1, yeah. I think that's the way it's going to go.
Okay. Great to have a chat to you. What a summer ahead we have. Look forward to catching up on Thursday. I'll be over there joining you and the rest of the team for that second one-day international when India treks to the South Australian capital, having got through, of course, the game in Perth tomorrow. Looking forward to seeing you then, Diz, and can't wait for the summer ahead.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing you too, Q. I think it's close to, if not a sellout in Adelaide, so very exciting for the people of South Australia and Australia in general, because obviously Australia and India, it's a big rivalry, and really looking forward to the series.